Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Powered4.tv Big Fight Weekly, episode 38, Chris. Episode 38. We're getting through these now, aren't we, I tell you?
Well, we are, mate. We are.
And what a weekend. We're going to focus firstly on UFC 268. I know it's been whetting your appetite, Chris, for a long, long time leading up. You know, you said there was a lot of big cards coming up. And my word, did it deliver. We'll be covering the boxing later on in the show. But Chris, we've got to go straight into it. The main event, the second fight between Kamaru Usman and Colby Covington. And my word, did it deliver, Chris.
100%. Really, really enjoyed this main event. I kind of thought, you know, with Usman in his last couple of fights with Burns and Masvidal, that, you know, if we go by what round two was like in this fight, I thought that that was the way it was going to go, because in the first couple of rounds, Colby Covington, however you want to pronounce it, looked very tentative going in with Usman. How can I put it? Didn't I want to go strike for strike with him at first? If you noticed this,
absolutely. Yeah.
He, you know what I mean? Because he, in the first fight they ever had, it was all guns blazing, and Kobe was going at him and going at him, which you did see in the later rounds. I feel like the fight was really, really good, but I feel like the judges ruined it as well. In both main event and co-main, the judges are more the highlight, really, than the actual fight itself. It's just the actual scoring cards, and we go off the scoring cards. I think they were abysmal. I don't think they were that. It was that far wide in that fight at all.
How the hell has he come up with 49-46, Chris? Because you could make a case for Covington, as you said. You know, he did plenty. You know, forget the opening two rounds, as you say, but coming out in that third round, Chris, you know, where he's been rocked twice and put down, you know, how the hell has that judge got 49-46? It beggars belief, doesn't it?
Listen, a lot of, you know, you listen to the commentators, you listen to Joe Rogan. It was good to hear Joe Rogan back, hasn't it, after a couple of months of whatever he was doing. But they were saying 10-8. In boxing, I'd say that's a 10-8. But, you know, Colby Covington got up from both of those strikes and carried on going through the, you know, trying to attack Usman as soon as he's dropped. Then obviously the bell goes for that round. But I don't think Usman was really in complete control of that fight after that second round. I think Kobe Covington found himself then, because he was hitting him with jabs and he was catching him with that uppercut. I don't know if you noticed, but every time Usman come in, it felt like he was getting stuck in the mud when he was missing strikes, because his head was down and it was just, and it felt like I say, he was stuck in the mud. And guess what? Kobe was lighting him up then. And Kobe was catching him with that uppercut over and over again. And he wobbled Usman a fair few times. The only dismay I've got for Covington in that is, why did you go for a single leg? He should have carried on chipping away. But every time he wobbled Usman, he kept on trying to go for that takedown, that single leg, which obviously Usman, being well-versed in wrestling, you know, one of the best in UFC and in that division, stopped it. stuff that takedown, should we say, per se. But also, I've got another query here for you. Is Covington took Usman down, all right, and they debated it much in the commentary. Cormier and Dean Thomas both said that was a takedown. But if you look back at the stats now, they basically said that wasn't a takedown. And
so why... Why was it not classed as one after then, in your mind? Why have they done that? Why have they made a U-turn on that takedown?
I just don't think they give it. But you can ask everybody else who watched that fight. Both knees of Usman touched the canvas. So that, to me, is a takedown.
You've got professional guys analysing guys who've been in the sport. They know it, you know, and yet they've U-turned on it. And do you know what, Chris? Another side note here. The crowd turned... I was hearing a lot of cheering for Covington, you know, whereas early on, a lot of people were going for Usman. I felt there was a shift there, you know, as that went on. As much as Covington's outspoken in his government views and stuff like that, you could hear it. It's almost like people were, you know, swayed for Colby because of his performance.
Well, he fought with a lot of heart because, you know what I mean, he did get dropped twice in that second round. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we all know what Usman's found that power in that right hand, and it's like a rocket, isn't it? But I think Usman underestimated Covington after that, because I think after he knocked Covington down, it was a bit of like, oh right, okay, I can knock him out now. You know what I mean? He tasted the power, and obviously at that point Covington was very tentative to engage with Usman. But after that, no, Covington come out. They obviously sorted out their game plan because it was all over the place in the first two rounds. And he kept on catching Usman. Like I said, that uppercut and then that right cross come across it, it was catching Usman. And Usman kept on dipping that head. And it worried me in that fight because every time he dipped his head, Covington came up with that uppercut. And you could see it all day. But Usman comes away with a victory, a hard-fought victory because, you know, as I said, and I've wrote in the banner, Covington really pushed him all the way. And I said to this... When they got matched up, that Covington's the only other fighter in this division push Usman.
To your credit, you've said that, you know, one else has done it. You know, gauging round, you know, the first fight. Sorry, should I say? You know, you did say that you've maintained that right the way through. You know, he's been matched up with people, but yeah, as you say, you know, in your headline there that you put together, it pushed him all the way. Chris, looking at the SIG strikes, I was going to do me own Scatman John, but I'm not going to do that because I'll
Scatman John.
I will brutalise it, but on SIG strikes, I was going to do a bit of Scatman, but I've decided against it. I'm the Statman, but that's what I'm doing. 175 significant strikes landed at 360, Chris. So a 48%, you know, strike rate there for Usman. And then Colby Covington, 143 for 395, you know, that he's actually thrown at 36%. Yeah. So he's thrown more, he's thrown 35 more strikes than Usman. Okay. Which ones were the most clinical in that? You know, you can take that away, can't you? But yeah, just I just found it, you know, quite remarkable. 48%, you know, and a 36% to Colby's credit as well. As we know, Usman's developed into one of the best strikers as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, no, he's getting it. He's got a lot. I think his defence has still got to work something out there, because we spoke about this last week and I said about Usman's got all his power and he's got his wrestling to, you know, to back him if he needs it. But he just get caught a lot, and he got caught a lot against Masvidal until he caught Masvidal flush and, you know, turned the lights out on Masvidal. Couldn't do that to Kobe, and Kobe wouldn't go away then. And I think, you know, I mean, you saw Usman starting to tire a bit towards like the latter of the fourth round going into the fifth. Not like monstrously slowing down, but enough for them for Kobe to start, you know, chipping away. Kobe has come away from this looking really, really good. He said in his post-fight that Leon Edwards and Masvidal shouldn't happen. He wants Masvidal next, which I happily see Colby Covington versus Masvidal, you know, not just for the fight, but the shit talk that them two are going to have, you know, being both, you know, used to train together, they used to live together, you know what I mean? The whole storyline of Masvidal and Covington would be brilliant.
You know, we gauged it last week, didn't we, in terms of Covington hadn't been as active as Usman as well, you know, leading up to this. We know COVID's been a factor as well, but what a showing, Chris, what a showing. Do we look at Chimaev, though, as the kryptonite, because you've spoken about him leading in and he's accounting himself very well leading up to it. Does Chimaev pose a threat to Usman number one and Covington? Because he's been touted as, you know, one of the next big things in the division. What are your thoughts? We have spoken about Chimaev. I think we've grazed Chimaev, haven't we, really? But what would you say for him? Do you see him, or do you think it could be a Masvidal or a Leon Edwards that could prove problematic?
Chimaev, it's a case of, yeah, okay, he's had four quick fights in the UFC. You've got to say the first two weren't brilliant per se. I know they're both UK guys, but Chimaev is just too good for them. I think if you're Usman, I take him now, because the longer you leave him to gain the experience, fight some of the better fighters to get that under his belt, the more harder that fight's going to become when he's got all that experience. Mm. When it comes to the actual fight itself, he's going to be a factor in the division. Maybe he needs one more fight. Maybe someone lurking around, because obviously he'd be in the top 10 now. Someone lurking up there, Stephen Thompson maybe. But then Stephen Thompson's going to struggle to keep him off his back if Chimaev wants to take him down.
This is the problem, isn't it? Stylistically, you've got to be looking to him and Usman, haven't you? You know, if you want to see ground based, which it will be. If you want to see what he's all about, he's got to test himself against Usman.
I think Colby Covington versus Hazmat Chimaev would be a good shout. I just don't know if that's too much of a jump yet. Okay, he's looked good so far, and he needs a test. He needs a big test. Michael Chiesa, I think Michael Chiesa is booked up now, but Michael Chiesa versus Hazmat Chimaev would be good, because Michael Chiesa is good grappling. He's got good submissions. He wouldn't get overruled as much as Li Jiangying did. Like I say, maybe a Stephen Thompson, because Stephen Thompson's still there. I think Vicente Luque would be a brilliant fight for Hazmat Chimaev, because then we can really see where his stock level goes. But I think, again, Vicente Luque is looking more likely, I think, to face Usman next, because obviously Usman's beat Edwards and Masvidal, don't forget.
Back to Usman as well, Chris. He's just one victory behind the great Anderson Silva as well. 15 straight victories, Chris. And he looks set. He looks set to tie himself with Anderson Silva in the next fight. But incredible from him. You know, an early loss in his career. You know, well documented. Other than that, he's been absolutely fantastic, hasn't he?
Oh, listen, I think sometimes it's good that these people have one loss. They taste defeat and then they know what to work what to work on to get better. Listen, he's wheeled off win after win after win after that loss. Hasn't lost a single fight since then. Mm-hmm. You talk about Usman, but I want to say there's one guy next to him in that division that is still going to be kingpin, and that's George St. Pierre. I've seen a lot of debate along Twitter, along Facebook, and I've gone through these sites. A lot of people arguing who's better now. GSP has more of the records. GSP's fought the best. GSP, in 6 years, when he was the champion, only lost two rounds. You know what I mean? Yeah. He's got a long way to go to match GSP, because GSP also fought some animals as well.
And he went up to middleweight as well. Let's not forget, you know, would Usman likely go up to 185? Could you see him at 185, Chris?
He's got it though, hasn't he?
You said it's lying a bit dormant, 185 and 285, should I say.
That's a big weight.
You know, as I was saying to you, across the board, all the divisions, but you did say 185 and 205, probably the weakest. So
currently.
It could do with maybe shushing up someone moving up then, couldn't it, from there? You know, we talk about it in boxing. We've seen it done in the UFC. So maybe, just maybe. Anything to close out on this one, Chris? A fantastic... What a main event it was at MSG.
Listen, I enjoyed it. I think every fight on that card delivered. And obviously, I know we're going to pick the bones of some more fights after this one. But I enjoyed the event. I enjoyed last week's and this week's. I think both numbered events really brought it.
Sometimes they don't. Historically, but they have, haven't they? I'd say right the way through COVID, Chris, there hasn't really been that many bad cards, has there?
There's been really good fights. There's been some lull in the main events, like a few fight nights it took to get to where we are now, minus Vittorian Costa, because that was really, really good. but we've had to go through a bit of lull main events that, you know, you wouldn't really put necessarily as a main event, but, you know, we've got so many big fights still to come, you know, one this weekend, which we'll get to, but I enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it.
And moving on to the ladies, Rose Namajunas retains in a split decision against Weili Zhang, Chris. The second fight between these two, Rose obviously took her out in the first fight. This one went the distance, but there's been a little bit of differing opinions on the scorecards, because in the split it was 48-47 and 47-48. And then another wide one, Chris, 49-46, reappearing in the co-main. And I know you've got a lot to say about this. So, yeah, Chris, I think we were both on the same page this when we spoke off camera. But, yeah, I'd like to hear from you firstly.
Listen, I thought Weili Zhang, this is what the fight I thought I was going to see the first time round, because obviously Weili Zhang proved and showed everyone this weekend how good she was, how strong she was. And she was catching Rose Namajunas over and over again. And it wasn't just the striking. Those leg kicks were nasty. And she was catching her over and over again. And every time Namajunas came in, she was catching her. She was switching to a takedown. She was really forcing the issue with Rose Namajunas. I think Rose Namajunas struggled in those first three rounds. You know, she did get off a couple of good shots to Weili Zhang, but Weili Zhang, don't forget, rocked Rose Namajunas. I think round two sent her back pedaling. My problem is you're looking at Rose Namajunas, and they both look really good. I just thought Weili Zhang took the first three rounds in this fight.
I'm with you 100%.
I think Rose took the last two. I do. I'm not going to say this is a big robbery, because it's not per se, but I think there's a big, big case for people going with Weili Zhang winning this fight. I watched the fight live. I did. And I had Weili Zhang up three rounds going into the fourth round before Rose took her down and controlled her on the floor. But you could see then Weili Zhang was tiring at that point.
How is it a 49-46, Chris?
It's not.
Was he half asleep at his chair, logging it into his paper? Because she kept pressing her. Yeah, okay, Rose was landing, I get all that. But that round where she had her on the ground all that time, ground control, fair enough, it was one round, Chris. The 47-48 to Zhang I'm going with. I think that was perfectly scored.
I think that's fair.
But fine margins, Chris, again, isn't it? And as we always say, opinions.
Yeah, and everyone's got an opinion, haven't they? Yeah. You know, and also, again, you're going back to the same phrase that Dana White said from day one, is never leaving the hands of the judges, because they can't be trusted to score a fight properly. Listen, I think Rose got off really lightly in this fight. I think we're going to see a third fight between these if Rose is still champion. Once Weili Zhang's found herself, and I think she's going to have a couple of more fights and get back into contendership. But these are going to fight again, most definitely going to fight again.
Does Carla Esparza have a chance against Rose? I can't see it. I think she's got too much momentum. I think, you know, Carla's come back, hasn't she, as well? Because she was highly touted, you know, years ago when they brought her through in the Ultimate Fighter as well. But yeah, that's only going one way, surely, looking ahead to that.
Yeah, but Carla, I suppose, you know, she won the Ultimate Fighter for the strawweight title and then bumped into one of your JJ. And, you know, the history's there. Listen, Carla Esparza's looked really, really good recently. Her last couple of fights, she's dominating, looked really, really good. Differences between their first fight and the fight would say if it was to be made now is Rose come on massively since their first fight and since the Ultimate Fighter. She, you know, I mean, she's come on so good. I can't see Carla Esparza dominating Rose like she did in the first fight. You know, we're looking at, you know, how many years ago that was now, but Rose has just gotten really good. But like I said, Carla Esparza can still take her down. Carla Esparza, if she can take you down, she can, you know, she can hold you there. I just can't see her doing that to Rose. You know, Weili Zhang couldn't hold Rose Namajunas down in this fight. Not all the way, but yeah. It's very difficult at the moment, because Dana White, I think, came out and said in the post-presser that he's not happy with Carla Esparza saying she wants to sit out and wait. He doesn't like fighters that sit out and wait for title shots. So it's one of them where we're going to have to see what happens.
You know, regardless of scoring, to be fair to Rose, you know, she's beaten Jacek twice. She's beaten, she's now beaten Weili Zhang twice as well.
Yep.
A record in UFC alone now is 9-3. You know, if you look, four of them victories have come against them two fantastic ladies. You know, she's defied the odds, hasn't she? Most certainly. The girl has got fight. Lovely post from Anthony Pettis as well. He's trained up in Milwaukee there. And I noticed he was very complimentary of how far she's come because, you know, they train day in, day out together. So, Chris, regardless of how we feel it should have been scored, you know, she's come through with another victory and looking very strong at strawweight.
Yeah, no, most definitely. Listen, don't forget, she eventually lost to Andrade as well. She was very lucky to lose the title the first time around to Jessica Andrade. You know, she got dumped on the head and those sort of things happen. And she was controlling that fight against Jessica Andrade before that. She got dumped on the head. She's fought some really difficult opponents as Rose Namajunas. Weili Yang's is going to have to get away, come back and, you know, see where we can sort of match these two somewhere down the line, because I don't think it's over. And I'd love to see a third fight.
Absolutely. Also, if you've got some views on UFC 268, please write them in. Send them over. Chris will put them up because it was just a fantastic event. Here he is, Lewis Young, all the way from Falkirk, up in Bonnie, Scotland there. How are you, Lewis? How did you find UFC 268, mate? Love to hear what you felt.
Okay, mate, moving on.
So all of this, right. Now, we touted this one, Chris. A three-rounder. I kind of wish it was a five-rounder the way it went. Michael Chandler and Justin Gaethje, Chris. A war of attrition. An absolute barn burner. As you said, the physique of Michael Chandler. You know when he gets in there, Chris?
It's like a bulldog.
It's unbelievable. And Justin Gaethje managed to come through. It was 29-29 on one scorecard, Chris. 29-28. And another wide score, 30-27 on the cards. Back and forth. So, yeah, Chris, what did you feel?
Listen, we spoke about this last week, and I you sent me the post from the comment I said about it being like Chandler versus Eddie Alvarez and Eddie Alvarez versus Justin Gaethje, and it was just like that and more, wasn't it? They both came in the first round and they started swinging. Chandler did really good in the first 3 minutes of the fight. He rocked Justin Gaethje, and then Justin Gaethje rocked him back. But the most impressive point of this fight was those leg kicks from Justin Gaethje, because my God, they are ruthless. And if you see the leg of Michael Chandler after that fight, it was ripped to pieces.
They pulled that up on commentary as well, didn't they? His left leg. And absolutely obliterated. Sorry, I jumped in then, but it was just the commentary of it, you know. You could hear the lads wincing.
Yeah, because no one kicks like Justin Gaethje in the UFC. You look at when they get close to each other, Michael Chandler and Justin Gaethje in a fight, and he whips that kick. I mean, that close as well, you wouldn't think you'd get much sort of power from that, but he does. But it's those calf kicks as well, you see. You know, I mean, I'm not saying Justin Gaethje invented calf kicks, but Justin Gaethje really made them more aware to people. He did this to Khabib. Khabib hated these kicks when they both fought. You know, last time Khabib and Gaethje fought, he was whipping Khabib with them, and Khabib didn't like it either. But the thing is, what I liked about this is Michael Chandler does what Michael Chandler does. He's wild, but he's powerful. And Justin Gaethje's now learning, as we saw in a Tony Ferguson fight. He takes his time. He's not going for, like, as he calls himself, the highlight reel. But he's calm and collective of his strikes. He's putting them where he needs to put them. He's not just trying to sort of fling it here, fling it there. You know, trying to be, I can't think of the word, over-excel himself like he has done in the past when he's fought in the UFC. But yeah, this fight was just what you wanted. It was advertised to be a war. And by God, it was a war. But then the only issue I've got, I think, towards the end of the fight is Michael Chandler. You could see he was tired, but he had enough energy to tornado kick, or try and tornado kick, get Gaethje twice. And I'm like, why aren't you just going after him? And he's pointing, and I'm like, just go after him.
Do you think that could have gone five in terms of the gas tank? Definitely for Chandler, because he's carrying more, you know, he's more stockier, isn't he, obviously. Do you think they could have done the two rounds without a stoppage? That was a question I wanted to ask you.
No, I think Gaethje would have finished him.
Yeah, you could see he was starting to wane in terms of, yeah, I get you on that.
Again, he caught him, caught him cold with that uppercut Stuart in the second round, and sent Michael Chandler into the shadow realm.
His face was a bit of a mess as well, wasn't it? Let's not forget. I'm going to go to six strikes again, Chris, because Gaethje's percentage was 63% landed, 116 with 183 thrown. That he's landed 116. Mm. I think that. And then there's quite a differential then with Chandler. He was 42% to 21% less, but he did throw more, 245 with 103 landed. But that kind of tells you, doesn't it, what Gaethje was doing. He was he wasn't rushing, was he? He bided his time, as you said. That would attest to what those stats say.
But if also there's another stat out there, Stuart, and I should have pulled it up. But apparently I think it was 1,200 strikes thrown in that fight. Significant strikes at that as well, mate.
Three rounds, that amount of output. Crazy.
Yeah, but you know what? These sort of type of fights, you always find them in a three-round fight, and you never get them in a five-round fight because they're all trying to sort of keep their gas tank, you know, for the go of the whole five rounds. But these three-round ones, you get some crazy fights, and then you kind of wish there's two more. But, you know, at the end of the day, Justin Gaethje is, I think has cemented himself for the next shot against whoever wins out of Dustin Poirier and Charles Oliveira next month.
This is what was posed before, and we spoke about this, didn't we? If Makhachev was, you know, teetering towards getting it. But on the basis of that, you know, either way, whoever would have won this fight, you know, the way it went, it's just, yeah, you can't have him jumping past Gaethje, can you, for that number one contendership? After we get Charles Oliveira and Poirier, of course.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, we've still got that to come. So, you know, I mean, the story and the narrative comes out after that fight's done, and we know who's the champion then, don't we? Makhachev's got time, and, you know, Makhachev, there's still some good fights out there for him to have. As long as it's not Conor McGregor, then we're okay.
Is that getting bandied around, is it?
No, Michael Chandler actually said an interesting photo on Twitter. It's like him and Conor McGregor weighing in, so Conor McGregor superimposed, and he says, soon 2022. Connor's replied, and you know, he said, like, he definitely wants this fight and he can see it sometime happening, but he obviously congratulated Michael Chandler. There's no shit talk, you know, said, wow, you know, well, great fight, congrats.
I'm impressed. There was no shit talk.
Well, bloody hell. You know, sometimes bloody he can cut, hell. Sometimes he can curb it.
Are we heading to one of the latest hot prospects in Irish MMA, Chris? Because you've touted this man leading into this one at welterweight. 6'3", this guy is, Ian Garry, Chris. And a lot of hoopla around him previous to coming to UFC. 8-0 now, Chris, against Jordan Williams. I tell you what, before the knockout, when he evaded that strike from Jordan Williams to set up his finish, incredible. Yep. I loved it. I loved it, Chris. And Jordan Williams 9-6 now, but they're going to build him, aren't they, obviously? And you're very hot on this lad, aren't you?
Listen, I've watched Ian Garry on Cage Warriors and watched him become champion in Cage Warriors. He's a very spunky Irishman, if that's the right way to sort of speak about him. If you watch for his post fights and his pre fights in the Cage Warriors and UFC, he's just a very happy, confident man. And so he should be with the kind of skill sets he can bring to the table. In this fight, though, I kind of thought he was a bit nervous in the first probably 3 minutes of this fight. He did get caught by Jordan a few times. You could see his lip and his nose were cut. And he was getting caught. He was evading a few as well, though. I think he was just trying to find his rhythm, calm his nerves, Ian Garry. But as soon as Ian Garry calmed his nerves, mate, my God, as you said, evaded that right hook.
Caught him well, then.
Flush with his own hook right across the chin. Catches him again on the way down and catches him another one just to make sure, and knocks out Jordan Williams, you know, out cold. Mirror image of Conor McGregor and Eddie Alvarez, that, you know, there's a video of them side by side, the finishes, yeah, and very, very similar.
Wow.
But, you know, Conor McGregor was very complimentary to Ian Garry as well, you know, which is good to see. Ian Garry's got a lot of work to do as well, though, because we're talking about the welterweight division he's going into now, mate, and it's a shark tank. He's only 23, so times could change by the time he gets ranked. He's come out and said that he thinks that him and Chimaev could be battling it out for the title in a few years. You know, interesting prospect for him. But yeah, he looks really good. Let's not rush the guy now, though. Let's give him a couple of good fights in and around his sort of rankings. Obviously, he's not ranked yet, so we can't. I can't really pull that up. But let's give him, you know, Mickey Gall beat just Jordan Williams in Jordan Williams' last fight. How about we do Ian Garry versus Mickey Gall next?
As you say, it's perfect not to... Just don't rush the guy, isn't it, Chris? You know, 23, as you say. And, he doesn't need to be fed to the top end guys, does he? You know, there's plenty of time. He's got time on his side coming in. And I like the frame of him as well, you know, especially, you know, he's a bit bigger, isn't he? Normally, you know, they're coming in around 6 foot or just below at welterweight, aren't they? So he's got, you know, he's got that size as well.
He's got the frame to move up to 185 as well, if you've noticed. I think in a few years, he can bulk up and go up. He's got a lot of prospects going forward as Ian Garry, but I just don't want this rushed. Just like Tom Aspinall. I know Tom Aspinall's obviously just got his fight for March next year. I can't pronounce the guy's name at the moment, Stuart, because it's one of them. But I think that's for the London card, supposedly, for next year, right, for UFC. Okay. Maybe we can get more of these guys on there. You know, and Ian Garry can get Mickey Gall. He can start climbing this ladder and we can see what Ian Garry's got.
Any other special mentions from the event, Chris? Anything else that stood out before we move on to Dana White's comments on video as we segue from MMA to boxing quite beautifully, actually?
Frankie Edgar versus Marlon Vera, mate. A lot of people didn't like the ending. They thought that the stoppage was a bit too soon, but I think that upkick that Vera hit... Frankie Edgar made him look like Homer Simpson. I don't know if you've seen the full picture of it.
I have. Not that I'm laughing. What a legend of the game Frankie Edgar was. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's sad to see. Caught up with him now.
Yeah,
he's been in some walls, you know, when he was at peak. When you look back, and I think he's just gone too long, but, you know, he's got that fighter's mentality, hasn't he? It was brutal, that still image that you're talking about. I had seen it, yeah. I think just call it a day now, Frankie.
We'll see. And then, obviously, I spoke about Alex Pereira made his debut this weekend as well. Yeah. Well, last weekend. Showed some heart because he got taken down. Obviously, not people would know a kickboxer to have good ground game. excuse me. Izzy didn't have that great ground game when he came into UFC, but he's obviously adapted and adopted a lot of different things. You saw Alex Pereira get up and you saw the power, and that flying knee was beautiful. On the button, good night. And he moves up now. And I think what's scary about Alex Pereira is he's got all this power and now he's got a lot of time to invest in his MMA skill set, which is fearful. Thinking what he could do going up.
So good night all in, Chris, wasn't it? Good. I'll tell you what, it was late. It was late local time as well, the main card, wasn't it? Because they're on the East Coast. So I noticed that. But yeah, what a showcase. And I think, Chris, we can move on to Dana because we're going to talk about Canelo versus Plant. So if you want to roll the VT with Dana, because this is quite interesting. A bit of cross MMA and boxing here
from
the head honcho at the UFC.
How many more pay-per-views did you sell than Canelo did tonight?
Well, I don't know. I hope they did well. I think they're insane. To go the same night as us, it literally doesn't make sense.
Did you notice they would?
I watched it ringside.
Did you pay for it?
Yes.
Did you notice they were kind of defiant about going the same time as you? Remember last time Canelo fought, they held him for Nate Diaz and Hoy, and then Espinosa was out here being like, "Oh hell no, we're not doing that again." Did you notice that, and what did you make of that?
Yeah, I don't know. He's an asshole, so. That doesn't surprise me. But, it was a bad idea. I think it was a bad idea. And they charged like $80 for it. I think it was $80. But I like Canelo. I watched the fight. I bet on Canelo.
How much?
That's why I watched the fight.
How much did you bet?
I bet $100,000 on him to win by knockout.
Congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
$100,000 for Dana.
Did he get $300 back, didn't he?
Is that what he won off it? Bloody hell.
Funny you mentioned this, Stuart, but I saw a picture last night on Twitter before I went to bed, and someone's obviously taken it from like behind where Dana is. So I think Rose and Nate Wei Liang are fighting, And I think when Rose has got Weiliang in the corner and he's there with his laptop, you can see Canelo and Plant there on his laptop. Him saying about, you know, did you pay for it? Mm, yes. I'm like, hold on a minute. I'm sure he did.
Do you know, it was the Dana Cage side as well. He was talking to someone behind him. I can't remember what fight it was. I could see him. You obviously can see him, his bald head. Like,
he wasn't
paying attention to what was going on. You know, just to further on from what you were saying. It's like he was talking to a guy behind him while the action was going on. I can't remember. It might have been Gaethje and Chandler, possibly, if memory serves. But just to go through that a little bit, just running the same night, it is questionable, I guess. But what do you do sometimes, Chris? There's going to be clashes, isn't there? Just that's the nature of it and what's going on. You know, what do you think?
Listen, it is what it is. You're going to get this with wrestling and MMA or boxing and wrestling. Listen, you can't sort of go, oh wait, hold on, they got a card this night, or we better hold off. Listen, people want to watch Canelo, so. People in the thousands, millions are still going to watch Canelo. Like, people in the thousands and millions are going to watch UFC 268. It's just split, isn't it? It's just one of them. But, you know, Dana White doesn't like Showtime. He never has. So his comments don't surprise me.
Espinosa got it, didn't he, there? Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's perfect now to move on, as we've touted this man weeks on end now, and he just gets better and better. Some people said the fight was boring. I didn't necessarily think that. It was a bit of a chess match again, wasn't it, early on, Chris? You know, you've said it before now, where he's sussing people out. And you could see with Plant's jab offense at times, he was just trying to adjust himself, Canelo. But what I found especially good from him was the body punching on Canelo's side. I think the body punching and getting inside, being the smaller man, it was a masterclass again. And then working to the head as well as it went on. And as you can see there, depicted in the photo, he's got all the gold. He's got his king's crown on. He's got his Mexican flag behind him as well. And just utter dominance at light heavyweight, Chris. And as we said, I can't believe people were going for Caleb Plant. It's just, I know he hadn't lost, but who has he fought really prior to going in there with the, you know, pound for pound best, which he is now.
And just think, he's taken 2-0 in the last two fights off two fighters that are unbeaten. Billy Joe and Caleb Plant now. Listen, he looked really good in that fight. Okay, I found it a bit boring, but my argument here, Stuart, is I just watched Usman and Covington and watched 268, and then I watched, Canelo and Plant. So my argument there is I've seen, you know, that type of fight and I'm going into boxing. Listen, he looked good. As you say, he's looking for those body punches. He was backing Plant up constantly in the corner, trying to catch him on the ropes. But he was looking for that left hook, wasn't he? He was looking for it. Not making it too obvious, but he was hunting for that knockout with that left hook all fight. And then in the 11th round, Stuart, not only did he catch him once, he caught him twice and cleared him out. He's too good, isn't he? Listen, Canelo is what Anderson Silva is to me in the heyday, where he just beats everybody. And there isn't really a challenge for him. But as you say, he can go up to light heavyweight. There's some good fights there. You said you've got, is it Benavidez?
David Benavidez is the only one now. And when I'm looking at that, the rankings, you can pull some rankings up if you want, because we can look at his next course of action. Because super middleweight, I only see him. There's only one fight. Anthony Durrell's too far down now. There's no point in taking him on. He's got to go for Benavidez, Chris. It's the only feasible option. You know, 24-0 there. You look through Durrell, 34-2. But yeah, that's the one there. You know, he's fought everyone at a level now. It has to be David Benavidez, just for him to say, look, I've unified it. Now I'll defend it. And it's only another £7 to put on to go up to 175 at light heavyweight, Chris. What do you think looking at that?
Well, as you say, he's beating everybody. Yeah. Okay, Benavidez is the only one there that, I suppose, in his mind, is the O's got to go, hasn't it? I think if he beats Benavidez, then, you know, where are we going here? We're going up, aren't we?
Absolutely, yeah. Into light heavyweight then, as you can see. So the ring title is vacant. Obviously, we've got the other boxing buds there, but we'll just go through a few. Artur Beterbiev there on the top. You know, you've got Artur Beterbiev, IBF, WBC. That'd be a huge match. Dmitry Bivol as well. You know, the two Russians are doing fantastic. They'd be great fights. Great fights. Joe Smith Jr., don't know a great deal about him. truth be told, but obviously, you know, he's there on merit with the WBO. But yeah, you start looking, if you just scroll back up, Chris, to the main guys in the ring, you know, he's beaten Callum Smith at super middleweight. Callum Smith's gone up, so I can't see that one happening. You're looking at Beterbiev and Bivol 100%. It has to, you know, they'd be two of the fights to be made. You know, that's the way I'd be looking for him now, because I think he's going to be problematic at light heavyweight as well, Chris. I really believe it. Look at it with Tyson years ago. He didn't have the height. He was 5'10", wasn't he? Had power. It kind of reminds me of Tyson a little bit, you know, on a lower scale. He's 5'8", but he's like a Mack truck, isn't he? His power.
Yeah, but it's not just his power with Canelo. It's timing, his speed, his willingness to work someone out. And once he's worked you out, you're fucked, because he knows what you're going to do then, and then he implements his own game plan. I thought he moved quicker in this fight, you know, to try and get the finish. Not like necessarily try and get the finish, but I think he worked Caleb Plant out very quickly in this. Because after the first round, Canelo took over the fight then and just controlled it.
I'm looking at records there as well. If you look, like, Beterbiev's only had 16. Bivol's only had 18. You look at how many fights he's on, like 60 fights himself.
Yeah,
he's just got so much. He's got so much experience now. It's just alarming how much experience he has. You know, it's that Mexican mold when they're younger. They fight so many times in a year when they're younger, don't they? And you know, he was having to fight in Mexico very young because he couldn't get the fights in America. But I think it served him well, experience as well. You know, that's a factor. Well,
Mexico's a hotbed, isn't it? So
absolutely. I'm just looking at other guys like Badu Jack. Maybe 3 or 4 years ago, yeah, maybe it would have been a good fight. You know, guys have kind of petered off. So yeah. I'm looking there. You know, we've got our very own Lyndon Arthur there in the ring rankings. They just haven't got a chance. And I'm not knocking Beterbiev and Bivol. They're the two. But they are the two I think he'd be looking to take on. And what a performance again, Chris. You know, he pieces it together as he does, and he just gets better and better every fight, doesn't he?
Makes it look easy. That's the thing with Canelo. But these are things that elite fighters do, though. They make things look easy. You know, you watch it and it's so flawless. Everything he throws, his movement, his head movement, everything's just flawless with Canelo. Yeah, he's problematic for everybody now if he decides to go up. But it's his experience over, you say, Berbatov and Bivol. It's hard to match, isn't it? 60 fights to someone who's only fought 18 and the other one's only fought 16.
He becomes a 5-weight world champion. That's just stratospheric. That's all-time great status for me. Which, you know, he's there anyway. But if he wins at 5 weights... you've got to be putting him in contention for one of the best ever. I've heard, like, well, the greatest Mexican fighter ever was Chavez Jr., but I question that. And the way he's gone and become one of the, you know, the kingpins in boxing on the whole is amazing. And Chris, I think we can move on to some news, domestic boxing news. A huge announcement, as we said a week or two ago, he was going to be on the card. Coming up was Conor Benn, and he's facing Chris Algieri on Matchroom. Chris, a lot of people are saying, well, Algieri's kind of like not focused on the boxing. He's training people. He's helping people with like the sports science side. But as I said to you, he's fought Errol Spence Jr., Pacquiao and Khan. A lot of people are like turning around saying he's cannon fodder, but he's got a lot of experience as Chris Algieri. I think it's a good fight to be made. You're going to get your detractors, aren't you, Chris? You're going to get people being negative about it. I think it's a good fight for Conor Benn. You know, a huge night for him in Liverpool.
I think it's a winnable fight for him as well, to be fair.
Yeah.
I can see what you mean by people saying he's cannon fodder. But, you know, I said to you off camera, well, this morning when we were messaging, you know, he's still fought some of the best fighters in his division. You know, you can't knock that. It's a test for Conor Benn, but I think Conor Benn's really, really good, mate, and I can see him going far in this division.
There's no question about that, and yeah, obviously Katie Taylor, her opponent is to be announced. So yeah, just a quick roundup here, and then moving on as well. Kid Galahad defending the IBF World Featherweight title against the veteran Kiko Martinez. We've seen Kiko Martinez against Carl Frampton. We've seen him against Josh Warrington as well. So yeah, a lot of experience. Kiko was a world champion 10 years ago. He was one of the best, you know, at the weight. But yeah, a big one for Kid Galahad. The only time he's lost was to Josh Warrington. Some people questioned that result. Some people thought Kid Galahad did enough in that fight to win. But yeah, huge, huge night on Matchroom. So yeah, that will be this weekend as well, Chris. So yeah, look forward to that one. And yeah, I think Galahad is heavy, heavy favourite on this one. And we've also got Harper versus Baumgartner as well on the card. So ladies boxing, super featherweight titles, WBC and IBO. And Billerman Smith, a European cruiserweight title fight as well. So another great card from Eddie Hearn, another domestic card. And Sheffield will be rocking as the hometown man defends his title, Chris.
I've not watched much of Kid Galahad, but you know, I mean, you do hear a lot of people speak about him. So I'm intrigued. First time I'll watch him, and I'll say next week how I feel.
Kiko will be a good test, but I think he's aging now. But yeah, as you say, can only beat who's put in front of him.
And that's right.
I'm not disputing it. He's a veteran. But yeah, Kid Galahad for me will win that one. And Chris, we do a full 360. We're back with the UFC as well. It's fight night, and it is Max Holloway, a fan favourite. You know, incredible. He's had an incredible career off the back of the loss to Conor many, many years ago. In some respects, it helped him. But I know you're a big fan of Yair Rodriguez. It was interesting to see that he's not fought in 2 years, Yair Rodriguez.
Well, he's been booked a few times, but I think injuries and whatnot have obviously ruined the sort of potential fights he could have had. I'm a hard one to pick, because we haven't seen Max since against Kelvin Cater. And that obviously saw how good Max was because the strikes he hit Kelvin Cater with and the amount of strikes he hit Kelvin Cater with.
He obliterated him off the back of losing to Volkanovski, didn't he? He needed a big win. He needed a big win and he got it, Chris.
This is quite interesting, you see, for me, because I feel like this is setting up for Volkanovski again. Because I don't think, unless Max goes up a weight, which I'd be interested to see what he'd be if he went back up to lightweight, because he fought Poirier, didn't he, for the interim title. He was supposed to fight Khabib when the whole Tony thing fell apart, but obviously he couldn't make it. Yair Rodriguez is just a monster with the kicks. Just incredible kicks as Yair Rodriguez. But the problem is, when you've got someone like Max Holloway who can throw that amount of strike volume, it's dangerous, isn't it? It's dangerous. But I like Max Holloway. Max Holloway, I mean, he's so level-headed, and I mean, he doesn't strike like he used to in the gym now. And he always, I think that's where people have come and said, like, there's times in the conferences, Stuart, where he was slurring and people are a bit worried about him. But like Robbie Lawler, he's come away from striking when he's training for fights now. So he's using that and then using that sort of practice in the actual fight. And you saw against Calvin Cater, He looked phenomenal. I can't only see Max Holloway winning this, if I'm honest. Yair Rodriguez could catch him with an unorthodox kick, because that's what Yair Rodriguez can do. But Max Holloway's just got the experience. I think he's getting better, even at his age. He'd be still young, don't forget. And I think this probably shoots up to maybe him and Volkanovski three, wouldn't it? Yeah, and then Max Holloway obviously has to win that fight against Volkanovski. Or I think, obviously, it's either he goes down the pecking order or he has to go up to 170. Or 155, sorry.
Which, he has been at 155. He's had a go, hasn't he? But, yeah, this fight was meant to be 3 months ago. Obviously, as you say, another injury to Yair, but we're getting it now. And it will be explosive. There's no two ways about it. Will ring rust be a factor? I always ask you this.
It depends on certain fighters, doesn't it? Certain fighters will use that as an excuse. Listen, these guys are going to have trained hard for this, because I think they know what the end game could be, or the possible end game could be. You won that title shot. I don't know if Ivan can beat Volkanovski at the moment, because I think he's just getting absolutely better. My words are wrong there. He's getting absolutely... I've said it again. He's getting really, really good. Like, Volkanovski is just getting strength to strength to strength. I think, like, anyone who fights Volkanovski, unless you can catch him with a lucky punch or a lucky submission, I think he beats everybody in that division at the moment. But I'd still like to see Max Holloway and Volkanovski go at it again.
Fantastic prospect, this one. Absolutely going to be fantastic, as always. And a huge, huge main event for Fight Night. And Chris, anything to add? Oh, there we go. Yeah, UK's up. Mark Diakese, highly touted many years ago, Chris, wasn't he, when he first came here?
Yeah,
you know, he was doing well. He had some good wins. I don't know too much about Rafael Alves, Chris. Not seen much of him. But yeah, good to see Mark Diakese back in action.
Needs a win, does Mark Diakese, if I'm honest, mate. He came in like a bulldog, didn't he? Then fought some really hot, tough competitors and has sort of fallen on the wayside. But I think he's also had a lot of injuries. He's had visa problems getting into the US. So it's good that he's got one now and he's back in. You just want to see him win, don't you? He's a, you know, a UK fighter, and you know, we high our flags for our UK fighters. So I don't know much about Rafael Alvarez either. This is quite a low down ranking fight, so I might have missed Rafael a few times, which is probably my bad. But I'm hoping Diakese can, you know, pull this one out of the bag and get himself back on the winning column.
Absolutely, yeah. Good to see him back, and hopefully, as you say, gets a win. Another domestic fighter who we really, you know, we had high hopes for him. So hopefully, he can put it all together. And that'll be good to see as well. And I'd just like to say as well, the Boxer Series is on Saturday from Liverpool. Our fellow Blue Nose, Tom Farrell, got to the final against the undefeated Corey Gibbs, Chris. Split decision win for Corey Gibbs. A lot of people said Tom Farrell won the fight in front of his home fans. But £40,000 richer is Corey Gibbs. So yeah, I like the eight-man format on the night. And it was three-minute rounds, Chris. But yeah, Boxer will obviously keep doing that. Very much of the same ilk as the Sky Prize Fighter series that we had for many years. So it's good to see that. I like that format, and I heard it went really well. Seen some clips. So yeah, Corey Gibbs victorious. But our fellow Blue Nose, Tom Farrell, some people said he did enough to put a blemish on Corey Gibbs' undefeated record.
Maybe they'll go again somewhere down the line, mate.
I think that could very much happen. And Ben Shalom, we'll be looking to book that for Boxer. Chris, any news? Anything happening?
No, mate. I'm living a boring life currently, mate. just catching on TV and stuff. Watching your episode of Dexter yesterday. I got it before it came out. Enjoyed that. It's been a long time. I was a bit worried it's going to be awful, like the ending of the actual series a few years ago. But it wasn't bad. It was okay, you know. So just that, really, mate. Just looking forward to things coming, like the fights. Fuck the football because it's depressing me. But you know, certain TV shows that are coming back. You know, the Cobra Kai in December, The Witcher in December. You know, Ozark in January. Just I'm quite excited for these sort of things that are coming back, mate. Keep me occupied.
Absolutely, absolutely, yes. This has been episode 38 of Powerful.tv Big Fight Weekly. We will see you next week.
Will we? Jokes.
you'd be stumbling. Then hold on a minute. No. So yeah, we will see you next week. Obviously, we'll recap everything and we'll have more analysis. Do you know what, Chris? We've had no Paul brothers this week. I can't believe there's been no Brett.
I don't know. Maybe he's hiding with Jake
Paul
now.
Where is Brett? Where is Brett? Like, he's a mainstay. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I think
he's cutting that grass, though, isn't he?
Been quiet on the comments, but it's been good. You know, in the same token, we've had a bit more time, I guess. And we will see you next week for episode 39 as we head into the Christmas period, which is coming up very, very soon. The dreaded Christmas period. And we will see you next week for episode 39.
See you next week.
I like that. Good job, Dylan. Good job. Much respect. Much respect. Go kiss later. Go back to your corner. Go ahead.
Well, you'd like to see
it. Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.